Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Warning, real life, real crime, the podcast should be for the listeners that are 18 years of older, as each episode may contain strong adult language and descriptions of acts of violence or of a sexual nature that were told to me by the victims of the crimes or the criminals who perpetrated the crimes against the victim. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Before we get started today, I'm going to give some more shout-outs, y'all, to the fans and our moderators and administrators, or what I call the dream team of our private page or group on Facebook. I want to thank you all, especially our patron members who have been so awesome. And this week, they'll be receiving the first mini episode, which is available to tier two members, and the first bonus episode, which is available to tier three members. So we've been working hard on that, getting it out. And also, our merchandise is in the store. Our first shirts came in, and we have coffee mugs and vehicle stickers and bumper stickers and magnets, all that good stuff. And we'll have more designs and colors on the shirts in later this week. I just want to say thank you, and I'm due to give a couple more shout outs for patron, our newest patron members, one of which is Miss Rachel Franzen, who's one of our longtime fans, and she's actually the fan who started our private group on Facebook. Thank you, Rachel. You're awesome. Rachel's given me a lot of advice, y'all, and help. She's a big true crime fan and now a patron supporter, and we appreciate you, Rachel. Miss Jackie Montgomery is our new patron member, and we appreciate you, Miss Jackie. You're awesome. Thank you for the support. We appreciate it. And Miss Melanie Shepherd. Miss Melanie, thank you for becoming a patron member. We are tier three. We appreciate it. You're awesome, and I love you. And Miss Sam Cross is also a tier three member, and Miss Sam, really appreciate you. And y'all, Miss Sam has also been instrumental and valuable to me, giving me some advice and messaging with me on things. She is a big true crime fan also, and she even tells me she'll be in New Orleans for Crime Con. And y'all know that Real Life Real Crime will be there. We'll be at Crime Con in New Orleans, and we'll have a booth set up. We won't be on Podcasters Row, but we will have a booth set up where we'll have merchandise, and I'll be there to do meet and greets and what have you. And any of our fans that show up, we're going to have a dinner or go out and take you to some of the local places, not tourist traps. Take you out and maybe wine you and dine you. And Miss Carrie Stokes, Miss Carrie, thank you for becoming a patron member, and we appreciate it. And Miss Brandy Elliott, we appreciate you. Thank you, Miss Brandy. And Miss Brandy has messaged several times with good information, and we really, really appreciate it. So everyone else, all our other patron members that I've given the shout-outs to before, we appreciate you so much. And I'm so very thankful, y'all. We've reached 18,000 downloads now, and it's just amazing. We're in 55 countries. Some of them I've never even heard of. One day I'll do a list of them because it's really amazing. 55 countries across the world that people are listening to Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. So, but we couldn't do it without y'all. Y'all sharing and telling other people about us, and I love it. I get to watch the numbers grow daily, and I'm like a crackhead checking the stats. It's so awesome to see, and I get so excited, and y'all motivate me to really do it. And I hope you enjoy the podcast, and if you don't, send me a message. I'm always up for constructive criticism, but I appreciate everything. Love you to death. So with that being said, we're going to begin today's episode, which is entitled Overkill. On April 21st, in 2005, I was working as a detective for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office, and I was on the night shift. Now, the night shift during the week consisted of two detectives who would come in at 1 o'clock, and you would get off at 6 o'clock the next morning, and then the day shift would pick it up. So I love working a night shift. That's where all the action was. It only happened once a month. It was 1 week a month that we covered it. And I never minded it. That's when all the blood, generally, when all the blood hits the ground and the bodies drop and stuff like that, right? So I was working it, and generally my partner and I would split it up. Like, he would cover anything from like 1 to 6 and then go 10-7 or off duty around 7 p.m. And then I would cover it from 7 to 6 in the morning. And if anything major happened, we would call each other out, you know, like a homicide or whatever. But it had to be pretty major. I mean, if I was going to call him out in the middle of the night, then it would have to be pretty much a homicide or a whodunit on something. But this night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from dispatch, actually a page from dispatch, and I called in, and they said, hey, you have a victim at North Oaks Hospital in Hammond, Louisiana, which is one of the towns that's in one parish over in the opposite direction from Baton Rouge, in Tangipahoa Parish. And at the time, Livingston Parish didn't have a hospital, and now they have several, but we would either have to go to our emergency victims at the hospitals in Baton Rouge, emergency rooms in Baton Rouge, or generally anything that happened on the east side of the parish, they would transport them to the closest hospital, which was North Oaks in Hammond, Louisiana. So they said, you've got a victim in the emergency room at North Oaks who was beat, savagely beat with a beer bottle, and he's all messed up, and you need to get over there. So I went, and I'm not going to say the guy's name because he was married at the time, and you'll understand why in a minute. But so I get there, I go to the ER. They knew who I was. I'd been over there enough times, whether the night shift. So I badge my way in, and I say, hey, I'm here to see my victim of a beating. They said, yeah, well, they're working on him right now in the room. You can go in. And so I go into the room, and there's a doctor and some nurses, and this white male, probably 40 years old, is on the table, and he is beat to shit. And his face is all messed up, right? Split. I mean, you could see skull. They were stitching him up. You could see skull, and there was blood everywhere. As you know, or maybe you don't know, head wounds bleed more than anything. Even a small cut to the head bleeds more than anywhere, generally more than anywhere else on the body, unless you hit an artery. This guy, he looked rough, right? But he was awake, and he was moaning, et cetera, and I waited. Once they got done stitched him up, and they were going to take him for a CAT scan and all that, and x-rays and what have you. But while they were waiting to do that or have somebody come to get him, I introduced myself. I said, hey, I'm Detective Overton with the Sheriff's Office. Can you tell me what happened tonight? He said, man, I was at the Canal Bank Club. Now, y'all, the Canal Bank Club is another one of those old-time swamp bars, but it's been a swamp bar before the area where it's located became full of millionaires, okay? It sits on the Diversion Canal right at the foot of the bridge that crosses in between Livingston Parish and Ascension Parish. And the Diversion Canal is a long wide man-made canal. It's probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 miles long that runs from where it ties into the Amite River down to the Blind River. And what it was built for was when the overflow from floodwaters come down the Amite River, instead of flooding everything down here, the diversion would help divert the water away from the Amite River to the Blind River, which would get it quicker to Lake Maurepaw and help alleviate some of the flooding. Anyway, so what happened when they built this long straight canal was eventually people came in and bought it up, and it's probably some of the most expensive homes in Livingston Parish. Like a small quarter acre lot sells for $250,000, and they're all $1 million homes. Coincidentally, the original owner of Popeye's Fried Chicken from the Christopher Pell story that owned all the Popeyes, Al Copeland, even had a summer home there because it's made for big boats and get to the lake really fast, Lake Maurepaw. But there's a lot of bars on the water, and the canal bank was there before the diversion canal was made famous. And it also has a boat launch next door to it and a huge gravel parking lot where people park the trucks and trailers where they launch the boats. But it's an old time bar. It's not a young crowd or anything like that, not even a big crowd, but it's a mainstay. It's been there forever, longer than I've been in Livingston Parish. So anyway, he says he was a canal bank. I think it was a Thursday night. And he said, man, I was sitting at the bar drinking. He said there were only three other guys in the bar. It was dead. It was quiet. There was nothing going on. And he said around 11 o'clock, the door opens and this beautiful little blonde lady walks in. He said, I'm talking about, she was just smoking hot, and everybody turns and looks at her, and she walks in and she looks around and she looks at all the guys sitting at the bar, and then she looked at him. They made eye contact, and he said she came straight up to me and she didn't say a word. She got crawled up on my lap and started French kissing me. He said she was all over me. She was like attacking me, and I was like, man, I hit the lotto, right? This girl's super hot, and there wasn't another female in the bar, and she's just crawling all over me and making out with me. He said, so we were making out, and we had a couple of drinks, and she just kept kissing me and was feeling me up, and I was feeling her up. Then the bar closes. They did last call, and everybody left. The other guys left, and then they were the last two to go out. And he said, when we got outside, she said, I have my golf cart here. Let's sit on the golf cart and drink some beer. And he was like, why do you have a golf cart here? And she said, well, I live over on the island, and you can only get the access to the island by golf cart. Now, that is on the opposite side of the diversion canal. The first, I don't know, mile or two, a couple miles on that side is still considered Livingston Parish. And you take the road to the left. As soon as you go across the bridge into what becomes Ascension, you take the first road to the left or to the right, and that's that road that runs along the diversion, and the houses are all considered Livingston Parish. So if you take a left, you follow that straight road past all these $1 million homes, and it dead ends where there's a little store, and then there's a bridge that goes over onto an island which has smaller homes, but almost all of them were $200,000 or whatever. They're like two bedrooms, but basically kind of like camps on the water. But there were a few that were there from like 20 plus years ago that were old. I think there were three of them that were in the old style. But anyway, she told the guy that she came from her house on the island. And he said, so they're on the cart and they're making out. And let me describe the canal bank to you real quick. It's a big old red building, and it's raised up because the water comes up a lot, right? And that parking lot floods it on a regular basis because of the boat launch. So it's probably raised up 4 feet, and they have lattice work. They had white lattice.
It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally. Designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
Shout out to AstroPro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
My allergies are throwing my whole morning off. Do I sound different to you?
I love it. You sound like, it's that time of year though, bro.
I sound different to me. I feel like I'm in a submarine.
Yeah, well, have you tried AstroPro? It's faster, bro. Oh. Right? AstroPro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. AstroPro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. AstroPro delivers full prescription strength, indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Hey, I use this. And you should too, Jim. Last weekend, I planted my garden, and it's that time of the year, and my allergies really kicked up with it, right? I use AstroPro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I'm back in the game, down on those rows, planting my stuff.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with AstroPro. Go to AstroProAllergy.com for a discount so you can AstroPro and go today. AstroProAllergy.com. It's faster, bro. Uses directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
AstroPro and go. Work that covered underneath the porch so you couldn't see underneath the building. And he said the golf cart was parked in front of the lattice work, and that's where they were making out. And he said they were really getting into it. I mean, pretty much having sex with her clothes on. And all of a sudden she stopped. And he said she looked up at him. She had blue eyes, bluish green eyes, and she started crying. And then she started sobbing. And he said, "Honey, what's wrong?" And she said, "My husband died." And he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He said, "When did that happen? I'm so sorry for your loss." She said, "It happened tonight, motherfucker." And then she took the beer bottle she was drinking with and just beat the shit out of him. And he said, "Man, she started hitting me. And I don't know if I blacked out or whatever. She hit me 4 or 5 times." He said, "And I was sitting in the driver's seat of the golf cart, my foot hit the gas and I drove through the lattice work and smashed the golf cart underneath the canal bank." I was like, "Holy shit." And so I said, "Dude, do you have any idea who she is?" He said, "No." And he said, "But I'm telling you, you'll know her when you see her. If you give me a picture, because she's smoking hot, beautiful." So at this time, we have what we call an aggravated second-degree battery. In the state of Louisiana, there is no attempted murder. Aggravated second-degree battery is the same thing as attempted murder. And okay, Louisiana is under the Napoleonic Code of Law, where the rest of the United States, a battery is when you threaten someone. An assault is where you actually do the physical harm. In Louisiana, it's reversed. In Louisiana, a battery is where you do the physical harm or the unwanted touching, in the assault is where you threaten someone. But aggravated second degree, what made it aggravated battery is that she used a beer bottle. What made it second degree battery is if you lose consciousness from the beating, or you have to seek medical attention, or you receive some type of disfigurement from the beating. So you can have a second degree battery where you lose consciousness or have to seek medical attention or receive disfigurement. Or you can have the aggravated second degree battery, which is all of them, right? And this guy had all of it. He obviously was going to have a lot of scars. He obviously was in the hospital. He knew if he was going to have brain surgery. Hell, but we didn't know if he was going to live. You don't know that until they come back and say if his brain's swelling or his skull is fractured or whatever. But I can tell you, he took a beating. So I took his information. I didn't call my partner out on it because I didn't have a suspect. But I went to the canal bank, and it's probably 30 minutes away. And I pull up, and sure enough, their golf cart is just busted through the lattice work, jammed underneath canal bank bar's porch. And there was blood everywhere. So I recovered the broken beer bottle for DNA evidence, fingerprints, et cetera, and photographed it and took samples and called a tow truck and had it towed out. And that's it. At the end of my shift, I went home. I filed the report, and I was going to check on the guy's status when I woke up that evening and went 10-8 or back on duty. Let me clarify just a little bit. I mean, I didn't just go home and not work the case, but I talked to the doctor before I left, and he said that I think he's going to live, and I think it's more cosmetic probably than anything, but they were going to observe him for brain swelling or what have you, and he said they wouldn't know anything for several hours anyway. So it's not like I had anything to go on, right? I didn't know who was in the canal bank at the time. It's 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. Everything down there is closed. There was no way to get onto the island to find out which house this girl allegedly said she came from, if she even came from there, although the golf cart really was a big tip. I mean, I know they use golf carts exclusively on that side of the river on the island. So it wasn't like I didn't care. It's just that there was nothing I could do at that time. Now, I made the day shift aware, and I made Stan Carpenter, who was the chief of detectives at the time, aware of the situation, and told him I'd be on it whenever I got up, and we went back 10-8 that afternoon. So I came out early. I woke up and got with my partner. It was Detective Brad Truel. And Brad was a newer detective. He was very, very sharp, though. We had worked together in uniform patrol and then on the special response team before I got off of that because of my detective duties. And just a great guy, super smart, and pleasure to work with. So Brad and I go to the canal bank. Didn't even open, right, until like I think 2 o'clock. But so we get together and we go down there, and I looked at it again, took pictures of the damage of everything during the daylight, and I talked to the person that was there at the canal bank, the manager, and the bartender that was working there that night before wasn't even in yet. I called them, and we were going to go talk to the bartender when there was a call over the radio of a 10-7 in River Highlands, which is the island where the golf carts are. And they already had units on scene, uniform patrol on scene. So we headed that away. And then Stan Carpenter called and said, y'all just sit tight and we'll see what's going on. We don't know anything yet. And we already have whoever the day detective was real close by, even closer than us. And they got on scene. And so we just continued to look at the canal bank. And then we were en route to go talk to the bartender. And then we got the call back that it was a 10-7. It was a dead body in one of the cabins on the island. And they said that they'd been stabbed numerous times, many, many times. And what happened was the victim, it was a white male, the victim's brother hadn't heard from him all day, so he went to check on him at his cabin/camp, whatever you want to call it, and found the victim in the bed with the covers pulled up on him, up like to his neck. And it was obvious to the brother that the victim's coloration was off. And then he pulled the covers back and he was just able to see that he'd been stabbed many, many times. Of course, the brother freaked out and called 911, and they responded. So it was a little bit of a logistics deal, right? Getting onto the island, it's not like you could drive your unit back there or get the Louisiana State Police Crime Lab big bus back there. So this one was going to take a little bit longer to work than others. But then when I called Stan, I said, hey, man, you remember what I told you about aggravated second-degree battery victim we had at the hospital? He said, yeah. And I said, the girl that did it was on a golf cart, said she came from the island, and that her husband had died that night. And he was like, well, it's obvious it's going to be connected, so we're going to start working it up. So we called everybody out and got together. Then, of course, the coroner had to come. The State Police Crime Lab had to come and process the scene. Again, at the time, we didn't have our own crime scene unit. And the victim was identified as Russell Perry. And that was the man that was found in his bed, covered up by his brother. And the detectives on the scene interviewed the brother and asked him who he thought it could be, etc. And the brother stated that Perry had been living with Rhonda Lambert, and he described her as a small, 5 foot, nothing inch, petite blonde with blue eyes. And he said they had been living together and she wasn't there. So they called us with that information, and we called the radio room and had them run her. Or she's supposed to be from Mississippi also. He didn't know where in Mississippi, but we ran her, and she came back with an NCIC, or the National Crime Information Computer, hit out for probation and parole out of the state of Mississippi. And it said, at the bottom of the paper, said, warning, if you come into contact with the suspect, she can be very violent. Now, that's kind of unusual to have that, and I've run thousands of names, right? But very seldom do you see that specific warning. So by the time they got done working the crime scene and everything, we all met up, and all the detectives and Stan Carpenter, the chief, and then we had already printed up photos of Rhonda Lambert, and we're getting a game plan together. Basically, we decided it was a Friday night, and we knew all the local bars would be active now, and we decided to go cruise the local bars, not only looking for her, but to talk to people and see if anybody had witnessed her. Because when she left Canal Bank, she left on foot, and it's obvious that somebody picked her up, and I mean, there's nowhere to go, right? I mean, it was a long ways to the island from Canal Bank, and she didn't go back there. We know that. So there's two things my mama always said. You never have to go far to find in South Louisiana, and that's a bar and a church, and that's the truth, right? So we hit all the swamp bars, and we were going from bar to bar showing pictures of Rhonda Lambert. And we went into one of them, the dock, and one of the guys at the bar showed us, said, hey, I'm Detective Overton. We're looking for this lady. Have you ever seen her before? He said, hell yeah, I saw her last night. He said, man, I was at the Canal Bank Club, and I was sitting there getting my drink on, and there's no girls in the place, and this super fine girl walks in, and she looks all around, and then she made a beeline for this guy at the bar and just got on top of him and attacked him. He said she was just sticking her tongue down his throat and just rubbing his crotch and going all over him. And he said, man, I thought, man, I sure would like to have me some of that monkey. And I told him, I said, no, sir, you wouldn't like to have any of that. And she's a suspect in a murder and another, you know, attempted murder, if you will. But we didn't find her. But what we did do is Brad Truel and I had a six-pack made with Rhonda Lambert's photo in it. And a six-pack, y'all, is just like you see in the movies. It's a photo lineup. And the Louisiana State Police computer program that they use now is amazing. They pick out, they run the known photo of the suspect, and they put it in with five other photographs, but the computer picks the other five photographs based off of facial recognition software. And I'm telling you, some of them, I know who the bad guy is, and these pictures that they pick out are so close, it's almost impossible to tell. Towards the end of the night shift, when we got the six pack, we went to the hospital, North Oaks, and showed it to the guy that she'd beat at Canal Bank. And when we showed it to him, he immediately picked her out of the lineup. And you show him the lineup, say, before you give it to him, you say, hey, look, I'm going to show you a lineup. the person that did the crime against you may or may not be in the lineup, and I don't want you to guess at anything. I only want you to say, if you recognize the person, I only want you to say it if you're for sure and so sure that you would be able to get on the stand in a court of law and swear on the oath that this is the person that did it to you. Well, we showed it to him. Immediately, he picked her out, and he said, no, this is her. This is her. I'll never forget it. This is her. So based off that information, we had a warrant for aggravated second-degree battery drawn up for Rhonda Lambert's arrest. Actually, I'm sure, I can't remember exactly, but I'm sure we probably called Tina Stafford, our secretary, out. She would come out on any big case in the middle of the night. She was the world's best at typing up warrants and wording them right and everything else. And then we'd have to bring it to a judge and get it signed. So we'd have something, if we found her, that we could arrest her and then detain her, and the detectives could question her about the homicide. So we got the warrant signed, and then the next day comes along, and it's the weekend, and so we're following different leads and stuff, and nothing's panning out, but Brad and I are back on duty. The night shift, when you're on the night shift, when the weekend comes, everybody else is off, and you and your partner split it. One of you takes the day part, and one of you takes the night, unless something like this happened. So we were working together, and I told Brad, I said, you know what? Somebody picked her up, right? And she had to leave on foot. There's nowhere to go. It's swamp, except for the big homes all up and down the Diversion Canal on the side of the river where the canal bank was, and immediately across the bridge. There's a straight street that runs to the left back to where the island is, where she, well, somebody killed Mr. Perry. And you take it to the right. Again, it's still Livingston Parish, that one street, and it's homes that line the water. I said, let's go over there and just do some good old-fashioned police work and knock on doors and see if somebody saw her that night walking, or may have picked her up, etc. Also, we wanted to look and see if they had any cameras that covered the canal bank parking lot. Maybe we could get some actual video of the aggravated second-degree battery. A lot of the homes on the water down there have cameras where they can watch the waterway for security reasons, some, I guess, to watch the boats go by or whatever. Sometimes the burglaries of those homes.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she preferred to do that, or she can do both. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple And in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Save big on brunch for Mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Would occur by people pulling up in boat when they knew the people weren't home, and they would go in from the riverside, from the diversion canal side, and do the burglary where people would most of the time leave the doors open. So we went over there for twofold: knock on doors, see if anyone's seen her, and also look at the area for cameras directly across and diagonally across from the canal bank, just trying to get lucky, basically. And we going door to door, and we come to about 7 or 8 houses down and kind of diagonally across from canal bank. And we were talking, everybody else was shown the flyer to, if you will, the picture of Rhonda Rose Lambert. Nobody had seen her. And we get to this one house, and it's a big house, beautiful home. And there's a new white F-150 truck. And it had a construction company name on it. And we knocked on the door, and a guy comes to the door, and he immediately set off my spidey senses, if you will. When he opened the door and he saw us, he like put himself in the doorway and kind of pulled the door to him where like you couldn't see in behind him. And, 98.5% of what I did for a living back then was read people, and still today with the polygraphs, et cetera. And I have hundreds of thousands of hours of interview and interrogation, and I'm at the point where I don't even need the polygraph instrument anymore. Anyway, we introduce ourselves. Hey, I'm Detective Overton. We're working on a case, and we're looking for this lady. And I showed him the picture, and he didn't look at it for a quarter of a second, and he handed it back to me and said, "Never seen her." And I was like, okay, here we go. And Brad, I knew he was thinking the same thing, right? And so I told him, I said, "Well, do you live here alone? Is there anybody else that we could ask that they've seen her?" He said, "No, I'm going through a divorce, and I live here by myself." Okay. I said, "So there's nobody inside of your residence, right?" And he said, "No, there's nobody inside." And he said, "Why would you say that?" I said, "Because, you're like standing in a doorway like you think we're going to sack your house or something, right? And I don't have the SWAT team behind me." And then he realized he was being defensive, and he kind of stood back a little bit. And I said, "Are you sure you haven't seen this girl before?" He said, "I've never seen her before in my life." And I said, "Well, then let me tell you something." I said, "I'm going to advise you your Miranda rights." I said, "You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to and during questioning. If you can't afford one, a court will appoint one for you." I said, "Do you understand your rights?" He said, "But am I under arrest?" I said, "Certainly not." I said, I just want to advise you your Miranda rights before I talk to you any further, because now I'm going to ask you a couple questions. And if you lie to me, we're going to have an issue." I said, "I'm going to ask you one more time. Have you ever seen this girl?" He said, no, I haven't seen her." I said, "So you didn't run across her Thursday night late, maybe walking down the road or something?" He said, no. I said, "Were you here Thursday night at your residence?" He said, "I was here all night." I said, "You never left?" He said, "Nope. I came in from work and never left, et cetera." I said, "Sir, this is a homicide investigation and an attempted murder investigation." I said, "If you have knowledge of her, you're not going to get in trouble. I know that you didn't help her committing the first two crimes." I said, "But it seems like you're being really defensive, and I just get the feeling that you're not telling me the truth." He said, "Well, I'm not talking to you anymore, and I haven't never seen her." I said, "All right." And he pretty much slammed the door in her face. And so I knocked on the door again. He said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I just want to tell you, if you see me again," I said, "you have two choices. You should either take off running or immediately turn around and put your hands behind your back." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Because if you see me again, I'm going to have a warrant for your arrest for obstruction of justice for lying to me." He said, "I'm not lying to you." I said, "I believe you are, and I know that you are. I said, "But if I come back, I'll have evidence and I'll have proof of it. And he slammed the door on me. So I looked at Brad. I said, look, dude, we got something here. We got to figure out what it is. And Brad said, let's check the houses across the street and see if they have any cameras. And we got lucky, man. The one directly across the street, his house, this guy's house, was on the diversion canal face. The house that we found the cameras on was across from his on the swamp side, not the diversion canal side. And it had cameras, and they were facing the street, and they're facing this guy's house, clear as day. But there was nobody home. So we left a card, and we went on, knocked on more doors, looking for cameras and everything. And coming to find out about a couple hours later, we get a call from the homeowner that lived across the street from the guy. So Brad and I go back to his house, and we tell him, hey, look, we're working a homicide, and we see you have cameras, and we know that the girl that did the homicide left on foot, and she may have come down your street that night. I said, do you mind if we look at your cameras to see if your cameras are working, to see if we can see anything? I said, we'll fast forward through. It won't take that long. And he said, sure, come on in. You know, it was a real nice guy, a real nice home. And we go in and playing back his camera system. And we went to Brad because he was the more technical savvy, younger than me and with the computers and stuff. But he fast forwarded to the camera that was covering the guy's house. That's the one we were watching, right? And the guy gets home from work at like 6:30 in the evening, and then guess what? He leaves like at 8 something. So we know his first lie was that he was home all night, and then he was gone for a long time. And then about like 2:30 a.m. in the morning, his truck pulls back in, and he gets out, and a short person, the lighting wasn't great, but you could tell a short person got out of the passenger seat and they went inside his house. Lie number two, right? He said that there was nobody, hadn't been anybody at the house, and he'd stayed there by himself. He'd been home all night alone. And so fast forward to, it was actually that morning before we knocked on his door, and guess what? He comes out of the house, and who comes out with him? Rhonda Lambert. And they get in his truck and they leave. So right then and there, we split and go cut a warrant for his arrest for obstruction of justice. And we go back to get him, and he's not there. So Brad remembered the company name. It was located in Ascension Parish, and we went to the work yard. It was like a piping company or something like that, something to do with the oil refinery industry. And we went there, and sure enough, the truck was there. And when we walked up, he was in like the fab shop area where they're fabricating pipe. And he turned around and he saw me, and his eyes just got bigger than, you know, the deer in the headlights. And I told him, I said, turn around, cuz, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. And he was like, what? And Brad grabbed one side of him, and I grabbed the other one, and we took him into custody and arrested him for obstruction of justice, advised him of his Miranda rights again. And we had to take him in and first book him into the Ascension Parish Jail down in Donisonville, which is it's a long ways away, down across the river, because he was in their parish. And then we had to wait and process him through and then take him back to Livingston Parish to book him in. But we questioned him. I said, listen, man, in the interview, I said, listen, why'd you lie to us? And he said, I was coming back from a bar, and I was crossing the bridge, and I saw her walking back from the Livingston Parish side towards the Ascension Parish side. And he said, I mean, she waved me down, and he said she was a good looking girl. So I stopped, and he said, we went to my house, and she said that she needed a ride and to Mississippi. And he said, look, I'm not going to Mississippi. And she said, well, I need a place to stay for tonight. And he said, okay, well, you can stay at my house. There's nobody there. And she said, it's fine. He said, and they got to the house, and she jumped on him, but physically in a sexual manner, right? He started kissing him and rubbing him, and he said, and then we had sex. And he said, then the next morning I saw about the murder on the island, and I realized it was her. And he said, I told her, you got to get the hell out of my house. And then she was like, no, you got to take me to Mississippi. And he said, I'm not taking you to Mississippi. And she called someone in Mississippi, he said, and they agreed to meet in Hammond. And she said, you take me to Hammond or I'm going to raise hell. And so to get rid of her, he said he drove her to a gas station in Hammond and dropped her off. So anyway, we booked him in on obstruction of justice charge. And anytime there's a major crime, that someone does a major crime and they go on the run, it's been my experience through the years, and you'll hear it time and time again in future episodes. When they go on the run, when they run out of money or their luck runs out, they always go back to a place that's safe to them. And for Rhonda Lambert, that was Brookhaven, Mississippi. And that's where her family was from, et cetera. So we had entered the arrest warrant for Rhonda Lambert in the NCIC computer, and we called Brookhaven Police Department, or the lead detective on the case called Brookhaven Police Department, and they, kind of a small town. And guess what? That it so happens the chief of police was friends with the Lambert family, and known them his whole entire life, as is a case in most small towns. And he agreed to go talk to the family and see what he could find out. In the meantime, we continued to look for cameras and talk to people. And one of the places Brad and I went was, there was a hair salon right at the end of the road. If you crossing from the canal bank, that crossing over the Diversion Canal Bridge, headed towards Ascension Parish, you can take the left to go to that long straight road that goes back to the island where it's golf carts only. As soon as you make that left, there is a hair salon there. And we stopped in and talked to the ladies in the hair salon. And the lady said, yeah, we know Rhonda. She comes in here and gets her hair done. Matter of fact, she just got it done on Thursday. And she said, I think her husband is a very controlling person. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, every time she comes to get her hair done or to tan, it was a tanning salon also. She said, when Rhonda gets here, she has to call him and tell him that she has arrived. And every time before she leaves, she has to call him and say, okay, I'm leaving now. She said, I just thought that was always strange. And she said she couldn't prove it, but she thought she saw signs of bruising on Rhonda Lambert, et cetera, from time to time. But she couldn't be positive. She said she just had a bad feeling about her boyfriend or husband or whatever he was. So at this point, it's kind of a waiting game. Of course, we're still looking. We're beating the bushes. We're doing the cop work, the grunt work. And we know, though, that she's gone to Mississippi, but we're looking for any type of witnesses or either one of the crimes. And it was kind of at a standstill. We're waiting to hear back from the chief of police in Mississippi. Put out a BOLO, or be on the lookout for her, and the warrant nationwide that she was wanted. And again, this one we had to put should be considered extremely violent. And the autopsy was scheduled for Mr. Perry, and where the detectives that first arrived on the scene had to go to the autopsy. And I'm going to stop there for this week. And because there's so much more, y'all, that I have to share on this episode about Rhonda Lambert. In next week's episode, we will conclude Overkill. And I'll tell you what happened, for everything from the autopsy to the investigation to the manhunt to the trial and what happens after that. Really, really interesting stuff. And we'll hope you tune in, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And I'm Woody Overton, your host. And we appreciate each and every one of you. And thank you so much. Goodbye. Me.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.